Abolitionist for Everybody is a podcast that tackles the sometimes difficult conversations around prison abolition. I'm Crystal.
I'm Ra.
And I'm Adam.
In this season of Abolitionist for Everybody, we talk about harm.
What creates it, what recycles it, and how we can find our way to meaningful means of repair.
Just a reminder, friends, in this episode and every episode, we dive into very sensitive issues. This season is frameworked around violence. And though the title of this episode may give you some warning, remember that harm itself tends to create situations of alternate harms. There will probably be other painful topics brought up too. Take care of you.
This episode is called Violences Against Children, and we're going to step back and focus on the big picture of harms against children. Things like poverty, home abuse, and hunger. We know the media centers sexual harms against children, and organizing communities often center children in juvenile facilities, and it is important to address these things directly. We will make a space for those issues. Later on Abolitionist for Everybody, we'll be joined by experts and folks who have caused these harms. But today, we wanted to start here first.
If you have a child, live with a child, work with children, or even just no one, you've almost certainly been in proximity to violences against them. Through this episode, think of what children need. What did you need as a kid? Okay, let's get started as best we can. I know none of us are children anymore. That is something I know. But one thing, you know, we'll talk about today and that we talk about a lot, actually, is how the experiences we have as children really shape our worldview and who we are. I know we started with this question of what did you need as a child? And maybe we should like answer it before we dig in. Adam, what did you need as a child?
Well, several things that I needed as a child. And like you said, Rob, we are not children anymore, although sometimes I can act as so. But what I needed as a child was a whole variety of things. But I can give an example of something that kind of shaped and hit and introduced me to, I guess you can say harm, right? Coming from school and kind of just being in class and, you know, getting in trouble, having to be sent to stand in the corner. And I remember standing in the corner and just feeling so humiliated, right? In front of this class, it's about 40 of us in there. And I'm standing in the corner because I was just clowning. And I remember that feeling. And when I went to prison, and to me, that was the same feeling of humiliation and everything that I went through. And as a kid, then what I needed was someone to talk to me and to share with me what I was doing wasn't okay, rather than punishing me and just putting me in a corner, because what that did was kind of added to me being a little bit more resentful towards teachers, and eventually things that I was doing at school, I started doing at home. And it was just hard.
And that is a practice that is used all of the time, in schools, like, you know, time out and sitting in like the red couch away from all of your friends. Time out after time out after time out, as somebody who worked in a children's school, it was like an everyday thing, honestly, with multiple children all of the time. And one of the things that I thought about in preparation for this episode were the hundreds, if not thousands, of letters that I read from incarcerated individuals. And whenever they tell me their story, and they have that same insight and those same thoughts as you, Adam, a lot of the time they talk about the root and the different things that they needed as children and the different things that they know would have changed the trajectory of their lives. And I know earlier this season, I shared about, you know, my nephew running inside every time he sees a cop and, you know, being so anxious that he like plays with his shirt to comfort himself. And I always wonder how these things will affect him later in adulthood. And I think of all of the children in my world and of the different violences that they're experiencing on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think I think the most shocking thing, I guess, for me as a, you know, child-free adult and as someone who still has a lot of proximity with children, because I have 12 nieces and nephews. So they're the plentiful in the family, right? And their friends are always like welcome at our house and things. But it's surprising to like think about the sheer number of harm done to children, compounded with the fact that we rarely hear about it, because there really isn't like a situational place for a kid to come up to you and be like, hey, I'm struggling with extreme poverty and it's having a negative impact on my life. Right. That isn't something a six-year-old says, you know, they just know that they're hurting. And most of the time, even that discussion is something that, because we're so punitive systems are so ingrained in our culture, usually that's not even something you're allowed to say as a child. Because if you're like, hey, I'm scared, we say, be brave. And if you say, hey, I'm, you know, suffering, we say, chin up, toughen up, grow up, all these things. And it's just right. Like, oh, it just drives it home. But it's hard to think about the voices we don't hear, you know, and even this episode, for obvious reasons, we can't have an actual child here with us today. we're not trying to like drag them through the harms that they recognize. We are not therapists. We are not trained psychiatrists, but even now, like we're having a conversation about them without them in the room.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so true of what you're saying as far as that undertone, you know, if a child is crying and you know, if an adult, right, gets tired of hearing the child cry, they say, stop crying. You shouldn't be crying. Right. But it's a reason that the child is crying, right? So we have to be the ones to give access to the children to share what it may be. And getting back to the undertone of a child crying, them saying, oh, you shouldn't cry, and just think that a child should just always play. But I think we fail to realize that children are little human beings, right? And something that I told someone when I was at the park working out, the kid came to play on equipment. He was like, oh, you know, go back over. I said, it's okay. I said, you know, kids is being kids. I said, because they little grown people. And he just started laughing and he walked off. But once again, you know, rather than me saying, yeah, man, take your kids over there, you know, this is where grown folks be. So like, if I would have responded like that, then I think that would have been something that we talked about earlier, where it says been in the proximity of violence to children. Like that may not have been super violent, but that would have been very, very harmful if I would have responded like, yeah, man, take your child and y'all go over there, because this is for adults only. So I think that we always have to consider and include our children, because they are our voices. And sometimes I can get into an adult manner because we always think like that we tend to kind of overlook.
Yeah, it's so incredible that we can overlook it, because the magnitude is so immense. You know, like when I got home from prison, everybody wanted me to read the book, The Body Keeps the Score. Like, I feel like that came up all the time everywhere. And I read, I think it's like the second paragraph of the book. I'm just going to quote it. 1 in 5 Americans was sexually molested as a child. 1 in 4 was beaten by a parent to the point of a mark being left on their body. And 1 in 3 couples engages in physical violence. 1/4 of us grew up with alcoholic relatives, and 1 out of 8 witnessed their mothers being beaten or hit. So obviously that wasn't like the best book to recommend to someone who just came home from prison. I was
right.
Stressed out by paragraph 2.
But, right.
7 years later, I can comfortably quote that and sit mm-hmm. with it for a minute and really think about what that means for the children that we're looking at. And those are like more direct violences, but as we've talked about already in this season, poverty is a violence too. Hunger is a violence too. And those are on a massive scale in this country as well.
And I just want to take a moment to emphasize just how massive that scale is. There's an estimated 17 million children today struggling with hunger in America. And that is 6 million more than before the pandemic started. So those are 17 little humans, as Adam called them, going to sleep hungry, you know, being hungry on an everyday basis. And as someone who experienced that when I was younger, I know what that's like. You know, your stomach aches. You can't think straight. Can't concentrate on schoolwork, and it's just an added stressor on top of all of the other stressors that little humans experience every day.
It really is. And even to the point where, you know, children or anybody, I should say, but focusing on children, will go the extremes to feel that hunger. I remember just maybe like earlier today or whatever it was, I was kind of just, you know, scrolling through my Instagram page, and I seen somebody post something that would show a little boy that allegedly was stealing a bag of Doritos.
Yes.
And you have all these officers come to this call for an 8-year-old child, mm-hmm, that's stealing a bag of Doritos. And one of the first things that I thought about, as a lot of us thought about in this work, is why is this child being arrested rather than asked what's going on or what do you need? Like, how can we give these children access? And when we talk about the pipeline to prison, that is a perfect example of the effects that it has on children at a young age that continues the cycle. And then, you know, later on, when you have people that's to be incarcerated, excuse me, when you have people that are incarcerated, a lot of these same effects that happened in their childhood is even amplified inside. And it's nothing that's being talked about. It's nothing that's being addressed. It's no help to going back to that childhood trauma that have taken place, that have kind of grown onto us over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I saw, speaking of social media things, I mean, that video particularly was horrifying. And mm-hmm, if anyone's going online to look it up who hasn't seen it before, just, you know, take care of you.
Please, please take care of you.
But one thing I saw on Twitter was this idea that we always say that children are resilient. And they were asking, if children are so resilient, why does every adult need therapy? Why does every adult need trauma care? Like, we are recovering from our childhoods, all of us. And I think obviously there are some really significant differences in how some of us experience childhood. I think there are lots of kids who steal a bag of Doritos and no one calls the cops on them. And that has something to do with demographics, you know. In this case, you know, there was a racial and poverty level demographic at play, which is two times the harm. And I feel like, I mean, we know these things because of the data. We know these things because of our lived experiences, but I think it's important to emphasize, you know, in Crystal's story, her nephew stressing out inside his house where he feels safe. And in your story, this child, you know, being confronted by a bevy of police officers. And this kind of just reaffirms this distance that children have and discomfort they have with authority, this very valid discomfort they have with authority. I mean, when I did time, everyone I knew was a mother. You know, it's 80% of women serving time in the US are mothers. And if cops took your mom away, if cops are keeping your mom away, if the state is keeping your mom away, like, is this the place you're going to go to for resources and for help? You know, like, we need to find a way to untangle authority from pain, you know? And I think that's learned so early on, that the people that you're supposed to trust actually cause more harm to you than good. Like, that's, I think that's what we meant when we said that we're all in proximity to the harms against children. You know, we all bear witness to this. We all participate in the system. And I don't know, I feel like I just took us down kind of a heartbreaking route. Sorry.
And to add on to the heartbreak, when I was on my healthcare path, and one of the things that a lot of my professors in, you know, different classes always emphasized when we talk about health, whether that's maternal health, children health, whatever it may be, they always emphasize the importance of the relationship between a mother and a child. They always said, if you want to make a generational difference and have an impact on children and an impact in the future health and quality of health of lives, you also have to take care of the mother. You can't just focus on the child and what you're doing for the child. If you take care of mom's health, if you give mom an education, if you get mom a job and financial stability, the child will be okay. It doesn't matter how many programs you set up for just the child. If the mom is not okay, the child will not be okay. And when you say, Ra, that most of the women or 80% of the women who are incarcerated are mothers, those are a lot of children without growing up without mommy, you know, the mommy taking care of them, just having that close relationship and close bond. So a lot of the times that is lost when we talk about women who are incarcerated and incarceration. And that's what about the children?
Yes. Yes to all of that. But let's get like super specific. What are some specific examples of violences that we have seen, that we've maybe participated in, or that we think people we know more than likely bore witness to? Or like take away just the idea of the big harm. Like, okay, hunger. Yes, we get it. Kids are experiencing hunger. But, and like Crystal said, specifically, that makes it hard to go to school, which is like a federal requirement. You know, they will bring cops to your house if you do not attend school. So that's a big deal. And like Adam mentioned, you know, getting in trouble for like clowning around. And that's kind of oftentimes associated with hunger and not basic needs being met at home. And I know I casually said like, and most of the women I was inside with are mothers, but those have like really tangible effects on children because you don't have someone to celebrate your successes with you, to teach you how to like reset the joys, because we can't just pick up a phone anytime we want. You know, we talk about our kids all the time. You know, we carry pictures with our kids everywhere we can. We make them into frames inside, but you can't just send them gifts. It's a complicated process. The kids can't just buzz you when they had a really bad day or an adult in their life hurt them. Gifts for Christmas, things like that. You go to school and everybody's talking about stuff that they got and your mom is locked up and your dad probably too. Mm-hmm. Cause the odds are if incarcerated people are almost always parents.
Right. And I couldn't agree with you like even more. I mean, just, and even you said some things like that made me go back to my childhood and some of the things that happened, right? I remember getting whipped, you know, with a branch, from the tree. I remember getting whipped with extension cord. I remember getting a bat thrown at me. I mean, it was just different kinds of things that was happening. Because the reality of it, right, our parents don't have no parental guide, like, hey, this is how you raise children. Right. So as we know, like I spoke in episode one, like it was things that was passed on to my family that was passed on. So like a way of discipline, this is the way we should discipline our children, you know, or this is the way we should punish our children. And that same mindset is the same with the punitive system. And so when we talk about physical safety in children, that was some of the things that I have witnessed, and even having friends that didn't come to school, right, because they were so brutally beaten for not doing their homework on time, or, you know, not taking out the trash on time. Like these are things that's happening on an everyday basis that don't get talked about because we have made it the norm on this is how we discipline our children. This is how we treat our children because, once again, they are children. And so for me, that's why I like to change it and say they are little humans. You know, they are little grown people, right? Because they're going to grow up. And so if I can be able to relay a message to a child and still give them the respect of being an adult, although they're a child, makes a big difference on how we parenting and how our kids were raised. If I tell my child, hey, go, stop doing that, right? 9 times out of 10, they're going to respond some a certain type of way, the same way that a grown person would respond if I told, you know, if I just say, hey, Rod, stop doing that. You're going to look at me like, what am I doing wrong? But if I speak to you like, hey, can you stop doing that? Because X, Y, and Z, now, once again, we are opening up that door to give children access to communicate and to share, you know, what is some of the wants and needs that can be overlooked.
Yeah, exactly. And validating those things when they finally tell us, you know, because you have to kind of create the culture of communication. They use the words they have, you know, that they're sad today, and you have to give them more words. You know, that's kind of our job as adults, which means our job as adults is to learn more words, right? And use them more visibly. Because yeah, I think it's human nature to not, like, I know me with my Nibblings is the gender neutral term for nieces and nephews. So that's what I call mine. But when I'm talking to the nibblings, it's kind of instinctive to want to protect them from things I'm experiencing. And so I don't tell them that I'm also scared of seeing police, you know, like that's not something I would bring up, like, oh, I'm sorry, the sirens threw me off, you know, and I need a minute to collect myself. And like, yeah, language, we need to get better at it.
You know, as you were talking, Rob, one of the things that came to mind was my baby niece. You know, as I've shared in the podcast before, my brother, who is incarcerated, has a daughter now, and she was one, I think, yeah, just turned one when he was incarcerated, and she's going to be 5 this year. And, you know, she hasn't seen dad in about 3 years. And as you were describing that with the little ones in your life, that is one of the things right now that we protect her from. You know, we taught her that papi is working, but she's a smart little girl. She's starting to ask questions. And I remember when you would visit him, you know, drive 2 hours to visit him at the county jail, and having to walk through the metal detectors. And I remember there's this big steel door that slides open. And after a few times of visiting, she would like tap on the door and be like, oh, this is Poppy's house. Like, we're visiting Poppy and Poppy's house. And it was just so heartbreaking. Yes. And she's growing up now, and she's asking questions, and she doesn't really believe anymore that Poppy's working. And, you know, all of the little ones in my life, or even my teenage nephew who grew up with us, and I saw everything he experienced, and how it affected him. And again, heavy on my heart is the thousands of letters I've read, you know, from everyone who's incarcerated, and all of the needs that they had, basic needs that they had. And I often think about going back and providing those for them, providing the needs that little human Adam needed, little human, you know, my brother needed, and how that could have turned out differently. And how come now as a society, we're not making those changes? We're not protecting and taking care of the most valuable people that we claim to be, which is our little humans.
Wow. That was a lot that we spoke on, that we covered. So I have to pose this question. What did we miss? What did we miss?
For me, it's not something that we necessarily missed. It's something that Ra mentioned earlier, and it's like, I really want to emphasize to pay attention to all the times children are not in the room, all the times we're talking about resources or making big decisions and the children are not in the room. As Ra mentioned, there's no child in the room today. And I know that I just shared some pretty scary stats, and we got lost in a few sad things and a few sad stories, but I do want us to end with a little bit of hope, because I know that there are organizations doing the work out there. So Ra and Adam, what is that little bit of hope that you would like to share with our listeners today?
Well, since you just mentioned the organizations doing the work, I do want to uplift a couple that are doing some pretty impressive stuff. Transformharm.org and the Bay Area Transformative Justice Collective. But since I haven't figured out my bit of hope yet, I'm going to pass it to Adam. Adam, you got something for us?
I would say that every day, our actions creates the ripples that create this culture, or at least enable this culture of harm. As we mentioned in the beginning, you are likely a part of these harms, but that also means we can change the culture with our everyday actions, creating new ripples, a new culture to be the new ripple.
I'm just going to echo that. I'm going to echo everything we've already said. Yeah, be the ripple.
This isn't the full story of the full humans involved in these experiences, or every complete community or person who has gone through experiences that parallel. We have walked this gently so as not to diminish the story, but to highlight and amplify the hearts involved. For a safe discussion that goes further in a larger but more community-based space, please join us at Abolition Corner. For more information, visit initiatejustice.org/abolitioncorner.